Yo, what's good? It's your boy 24K Golden, and I'm here with Rebel Radio having some titillating conversation. We're having some titillating conversation this morning. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio. What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. We talk about how they do it, why they do it, and what you can do to get a little piece of the pie for yourself. We're also the only show to bring you new music every week from our friends over at EDM.com. I'm Josh Levine, and man, I really like this guy, 24K Golden. He's talented, he's smart, he knows who he is and what he's trying to do. He's got a vision for his brand. We have some great conversations for any of you from the Bay. He's from San Francisco like I am, so we dig into that a little bit about what's happening up there with music and culture. And he's got one of my favorite stories. I swear I've told this story to 10 people already about how he launched his rap career at his college. I won't spoil it, but really smart. Great stories coming up from 24K Golden after the EDM.com track of the week. Jan the second with Roland, the EDM.com track of the week. If you like that, get over to EDM.com, check out more new music. And right now, let's talk to 24K Golden. Rolling in grass, I want it bad. I'm calling a
cab, bringing you back, bringing you back. I wish they just had like cell phone videos back then, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad we snuck by a lot of shit without that.
Yeah, I feel like the world was like a lot more wild before people realized like, damn, anything I do at any moment can be captured and potentially shared.
You know, I wonder if that's forever. I think that's really interesting. I mean, I've been reading about how there's a lot of things have kind of calmed down in certain ways. I know in the 80s we were wild. We were getting away with everything we could. And I wonder how much of that is because everything is captured.
Yeah. Like, if you think about it, like the old Wild West days and shit like that, you just like pull up to a small town,
right,
rob a bank, and then just dip off on your horse, and like no one was gonna find you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you even think about like, you know, I think about like the mafia, how they were controlling the trucking, and they would just truck loads of stuff would disappear.
Yeah.
And like, you can't do that now because they could track everything.
Yeah.
You know, they can, technology.
Barcodes.
Yeah, for sure. You can put trackers on everything and know where it is.
Yeah.
Right, it's crazy.
My grandma told me this story about my grandpa. So during the Prohibition, like to make extra money, he would do just like side jobs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And my mom's side of the family's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So they had him like drive a truck from Pittsburgh to New York or some shit like that. And they were going to pay him like $300, which was like mad bread back then. And he was like, all right, bet. And he opened up the truck and there are watermelons in the back. So he's like, okay, cool, you know. And he drives to New York. And when he drops off the truckload, he sees him take off like the top layer of watermelons. And there's just like a shitload of alcohol there that they were just like going to be running in like the little underground speakeasies like that. He's like, damn, I didn't even know. Like, I just committed a fucking federal crime.
For sure. But yeah, I mean, stuff like that, I'm sure happen all the time.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So Lowell, where you went to high school, so you have to take a test and get accepted.
Yeah.
And so I took the test and I got accepted. And then all my friends were going to Mission. And so I was like, I'm not going to that nerd school.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't. I went to McAteer instead.
Yeah.
And it definitely is a moment that changed my life. I don't know how, but I'm sure it would have been different if I had went to Lowell. That's good. You made the right choice.
Yeah, just like I was like the only one of my real friends from middle school that went to Lowell. But it's just like my parents really like from an early age, they kind of instilled a mindset where it's like, all right, you got to do what's best for you. You know,
for sure.
Like, if your friends are really your friends, they're going to be your friends regardless of what high school you go to. You live in the same city, you know, so it all worked out in the end.
Well, it's funny because I did that because I wanted to be with all my friends.
Yeah.
They all end up going to a different school than me anyway.
Yeah.
And so, it was just stupidity.
But, you know.
But that's how it is.
Everything happens for a reason.
That's right. We got here
exactly.
One way or another.
Now we are.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I appreciate you making time to do this.
Yeah.
And I've been digging the music and just the whole vibe, the videos and all that.
Thank you.
It's good. So let's talk about it. How did you get started? Tell me about... Do you remember the first record you ever bought?
The first record I ever bought, like, I was like always the kid that was like giving money to like the homeless people and stuff like that, and whenever people would like be trying to like sell their CDs like on the sidewalk, I'd be like, all right, fuck it, I'll buy it.
Right?
So I think the first record I bought was probably like when we were me and my family were visiting LA and just like walking up and down Hollywood, mm-hmm. and there was a dude. I'm trying to remember his name. I think it was like P Styles or Stylin' P or something like that. Some name with a P in it.
Right.
But he was just like, it's a personality. You know, he got us on the hook and we bought like two CDs for like 30 bucks or something like that. But his shit was actually pretty slapping.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. Some of those dudes are like, they're such good salespeople. Like,
yeah.
They just have charisma on the street, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder how many of those people have actually kind of made a career with music.
I feel like the music doesn't even have to be that good,
right?
Because all you're selling them is a personality.
For sure.
And because it's CDs, no one's gonna be like, oh yeah, let me just bust out my Walkman and listen right now and see if this shit is good. It's more like, all right, I'm gonna talk to you for 10 minutes, get 10 bucks out of you, and then move it on to the next person.
For sure.
So, because if you're selling, like, if you're printing up the CDs for $3 each and you're selling them for 10, you sell 100, that's 700 bucks right there.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're gonna have to pay taxes on that.
Right. Yeah, well, for sure.
You're supposed to, but.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting business. I mean, I remember kind of first seeing that and just thinking, you know, yeah, somebody can make a lot of money doing that.
Yeah.
And then what about, like, what was the music that you got into first as a kid?
Like, I distinctly remember my mom putting me on to Kanye West.
Mm-hmm.
What's the song? Is it? Let's have a toast for the douchebags. That one.
Okay.
And just, we were in the car, like, she was playing it off her iPad. I was like, yo, this shit is, like, something I've never heard before. I was probably 9 or 10 years old. And, like, it was always, my family was always, like, very musical.
Because
mm-hmm. my mom, she used to do choir. And
okay.
they had traveled all around the world. So they got, like, a real global perspective of music.
Yeah.
And, like, singing me to sleep and stuff like that. So music was always a part of my life. But I think Kanye was definitely the first artist that I was really a big fan of.
And then how'd you get started rapping?
So freshman year, I would just be hanging out. Let's start there. Freshman year, I would just be hanging out with my friends. And we kind of, you know, like all high school kids, everybody got a phase where they just start freestyling.
Sure.
Yo, throwing a beat, Playboi Carti type beat, you know, mm-hmm. Joey Badass type beat, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we would just do that all the time. And they told me, like, yo, you're actually pretty good at this. So that kind of planted the seed in my mind.
Nice.
And then, are you familiar with Paperboi?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Paperboi, his store, Dream Team SF, which mm-hmm. is like the sneaker boutique. I'd been going there since I was 13 because it was like 3 blocks away from my house. And I was a huge sneakerhead. So we just started building that relationship. And he had a studio above the store. So I knew that I was capable of making good music. And he saw the potential in me, too. So he was like, yo, just come up to the studio. He wrote my first record for me, recorded it, and mixed it, dropped it on SoundCloud that night, texted all my friends.
Yeah.
And then when I went to Lowell the next day, everyone was like, yo, bro, this shit is fucking sick. Even though, like, looking back now, you always kind of hate your first record. So you can't even find it online anymore.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was just like a snowball effect. And each song that I put out made me want to get better at it. And sure. the better I got, more people liked it. And then now we're here.
How, I mean, that's so interesting to get that feedback like instantly.
Yeah.
How important is that, do you think, to get, you know, like a lot of people, especially I think if you're older, you know, people like work on their music for a long time before anybody hears it.
Yeah.
And so that first song is usually your 25th song or whatever.
Yeah.
How important do you think that was for you to have that immediate reaction?
I never even thought about that before. Mm. Because, like, a lot of people, they'll tell me, oh, yeah, I'm making music. I'm like, all right, well, what songs do you have out? They're like, right. oh, I don't have any out yet. I'm like, right. well, if you're making music but you don't have any songs out, that means nobody really knows you're making music and there's no chance of you succeeding, you know? Sure. Like, I think that it's better to put out 5 bad records mm-hmm. and then a good record mm. than just nothing at all and then your first record being just like an okay record, because it's a process, you know? You can't be proficient or excellent at something the first time you do it. Like Lil Nas X, for example, yeah. I found Old Town Road like pretty early on mm-hmm. to what it from being what it is now mm-hmm. and like I went, this is when he had his other original songs on Spotify and shit too,
right, right.
And I was listening to them, I was like, none of these are anywhere near as good right. as Old Town Road. Sure. But because they were there, you know, it shows like milestones and progress markers, and just being able to have people respond instantaneously through the internet and both in person if you're promoting your music well mm-hmm. is just so valuable, because it's like constructive criticism, you know? Yeah. You can't let your ego get in the way and be like, oh, they don't like it, fuck them, because sure. that's the people that's going to be, that you want to listen to your music, you know?
Right, right, right.
Yeah, so that's just my thought on it.
Yeah, I agree, and I also think, you know, you need that encouragement. Like yeah. you said, it made you want to keep getting better,
yeah.
right? It's funny, you know, if you look back at the really, you know, the icons, the classic artists, you know, the Stevie Wonder,
yeah,
George Clinton, you know, I know I'm talking about different eras, but, you know, Michael Jackson, Prince, their biggest record was never the first record.
Yeah.
It was always third, fourth, fifth album, U2, right, Rolling Stones, all those. It's always that third, fourth, or fifth album that, like, really, like, the first ones will do well, but it's that other one that pushes them over the top.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about that if you, then there's all the other people that had that one big song that was like their first song and then they could never do it again.
Yeah. I think my generation really has like a problem with patience.
Sure.
Just because we get everything instantly or practically instantly nowadays yeah. without really having to put out that much effort. Like, oh, you want some food? Postmates. Mm-hmm. You need to go somewhere? Uber, mm-hmm. like Bird, whatever. You feeling bad about yourself, you post a little thotty pic on Instagram, a little thirst trap, and then
right.
you get a bunch of validation and instant gratification. So, like, people would rather have that one hit that just blows up than a career. Like, that's why when I see, like, some of my contemporaries, like YBN Cordae talking about, oh, I don't care about first week album sales. Like, mm-hmm. I care about longevity. I care sure. about building a fan base. Like, those are the type of people that are going to be successful and make a career out of it.
So how do you think about that? Like, do you catch yourself in that kind of loop of instant gratification? And,
yeah.
and what do you do?
I mean, like, everybody likes to be, everyone likes what they want and wants it now, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
There are times where, like, I use, like, to the technology to benefit myself, and it is instant gratification, but I'm not really reliant on it, you know? Like, I can post a picture on Instagram and everyone could, like, no one could like it, and I'd still be fine with my day, you know? Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, like, this right now, like, this moment is all we have. This is real life,
yeah.
and I just try to have as great of a possible time in the now that I can.
Yeah, that's dope. So you talked about the sneaker shop, and I know sneakers is big for you.
Yeah, we got the Bape UGG collabs on right now.
Fresh.
Straight from Japan.
That's sick. I haven't seen those. It's dope.
Thank you.
I don't fuck with UGGs, but like those are like cool.
I don't really fuck with UGGs
either.
I've
been giving my wife shit about UGGs for like 10 years.
Bro, I heard someone say like the fur on the inside of the UGGs like keeps your feet cool and also keeps it warm. Like,
can't imagine.
Psh, I don't know.
I don't know. They look hot, but those are dope.
if you own a business and you don't take care of your business, you won't have a business. I know a lot of you are entrepreneurs, creatives, people building your companies just like I am. And, you know, if you're like me, you struggle to keep up with it all. There's always some things falling through the cracks. You know, you're trying to get to the stuff that you love and is most important to you, but you got to take care of your administration, your contracts, your invoices, your client communications, all that stuff. So HoneyBook is a great online business management tool that organizes all of those communications in one place and makes it simple to run your business better. Comes with templates, automation to kind of keep all that stuff on track so that you can focus on the things that you want to be doing. It integrates with your other services, QuickBooks, Google, MailChimp, whatever you use, HoneyBook might use it too. It's a great choice for business management, for freelancers, business owners, lets you save time and do more of the part that you love. Right now, HoneyBook is offering our listeners 50% off with your first year. Use the promo code REBEL. Payment's flexible, and the promotion applies whether you pay monthly or annually. Go to HoneyBook.com. Use the promo code REBEL for 50% off your first year. That's HoneyBook.com, promo code REBEL.
How'd you get into sneakers? Like, where'd it come from?
It was just like being.
And that was before music for you.
Yeah, sneakers. Okay. Sneakers was my passion before music. Like,
okay.
I was big into the whole reselling thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I would say 2012 to 2016,
17. So
that's
like eBay?
Yeah, so it was eBay, Facebook groups. Like, right. There was like Bay Area sneakerhead groups, like San mm-hmm. Francisco sneakerhead groups, all on Facebook. So I started off really just because I wanted to wear nice shoes. I would see other kids having nice shoes. And my parents weren't going to spend they weren't even going to spend $80 on the shoes. And Jordans were hitting for $120 right back then. I was rocking the Ross shits and the Converses for the mad longest. Uh-huh. So I was like, all right, if I want these, I'm going to have to get them myself. So I would buy like used shoes, mm-hmm. clean them up, and then flip them on those groups, take the cash, and then keep reinvesting until I had enough to buy what I wanted for myself too.
And did somebody put you up on game, or you just figured that out on your own?
Really, initially, it was just me kind of figuring it out on my own, which, looking back now, is kind of crazy, because now it's mainstream culture, you know? Oh, this thing is hype. We could resell it. We could put it on Grailed. But back then, no one really was doing that, like my age.
Yeah. It's crazy. Do you remember, like, the first big cop or the ones you flipped or whatever?
Yeah, I think, like, some of the most like legendary sneakers I owned. I had Galaxy Foam Posits. I've had the Yeezy Ones, mm-hmm. Yeezy Twos, like at least one model of all the original, the 750 Yeezys and the 350, the Kanye ones. Mm-hmm. Big Kanye fan. Mm-hmm. Raging Bull Fives, like Space Jams. There's just, I really respect Nike and Jordan especially for being able to create a whole culture out of a product, because like, people aren't just buying the shoe. They're buying into a culture, a movement.
Yeah.
And that's like the best way to sell anything.
It's funny. I mean, I talk with brand people about that all the time, because you know, I was into sneakers as a kid. All we ever wore was Chucks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you started to see, so I know this is ancient history, but like, you know, you started to see the suede Pumas and shell toes like popping up.
Yeah.
And then for me, like the first pair that I bought that was over like $50 was Nike Legends.
Which ones were those?
You can't find them. They were out for like 2 years, and then Air Force Ones kind of replaced them. And then Jordans came out, you know, I think a year or two later.
Yeah.
But I remember then $60 for sneakers was crazy.
Right.
Because I think Chucks were 12.
You can get Chucks for $12?
I'm pretty sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it was a whole different, like, Chucks were 12. I think Dickies were 25 or $30.
Like the Dickies pants?
Yeah.
And so pants were more than shoes?
Yeah. But like, that was your whole outfit, was like $50 for, and then a, you know, t-shirt or whatever. That was
a little Hanes
that
joint.
Was every, yeah, that was
Gildan.
It. So like $100 from head to toe, you're good, you know? And
was that like the freshest outfit of the time, the Dickies, the Chucks, and the like white tee or whatever?
It's just what everybody wore. Mm. You know, it wasn't like we didn't have this type of fashion consciousness that we did today. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember, I'll tell you a good San Francisco story. So I was 14, and I go into, in Union Square, I go into the Louis Vuitton store.
Yeah.
And the lady is like snooty. It's like one of those movies where you're like, you don't belong there.
Yeah.
And so she's looking at me snotty, and I'm like, I like to try on your jacket. And she looks at me like, we don't have jackets.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, there's a guy at my school that has your jacket. You know, and I thought she was like messing with me or whatever, because I'm sure I couldn't have afforded the jacket anyway, yeah. Right? But, you know, I didn't know that. She didn't know. So anyway, it turned out it was like this drug dealer kid that had a fake Louis jacket made. I didn't even know that that was a thing.
Yeah.
Right? But that was the only time I'd ever seen the Louis Vuitton brand, you know, was some dude. Or, you know, guys used to put on the back of their cars, right? Like you could put a little leather over the lights.
Yeah.
And so anyway, but besides that, I never heard of that.
Was it like one of them like Dapper Dan, like Louis V print all over yep. type of jackets?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
those shits
but we didn't know back then, you know, we didn't have internet or Instagram to tell us what it was. So you just, you know, you only knew what you saw.
That's crazy. Like you're just to think like your whole view of the world was just limited by wherever you decided to like spawn into the world.
For well,
not
sure.
even decided.
Yeah.
You just kind of pop up somewhere and it's like, all right, this is it.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, I consider myself lucky to grow up in San Francisco where, you know, we were exposed to a lot of things
yeah.
that, you know, we got hip hop much earlier than the rest of the country or the rest yeah. of the world, for sure. But yeah, it's crazy how it's changed now. But my point was like Nike picked up on that. Nike, you know, there were these cats right here on Melrose, Sporty LA
yeah.
and a couple others that were putting the Gucci and the Louis leather onto Air Force Ones.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, reselling them. And then, you know, Nike saw that happening and then they started kind of investing in the re-releases and then Adidas followed and all that. But that was them paying attention to their customers.
Yeah.
Right. And not trying to kind of control it.
Yeah.
But kind of following what people are doing in the streets.
Yeah. I think like that's so like essential for anyone that's like just trying to do a brand, like people, you can't just push whatever you want onto people. You gotta right. like put something out and then listen and then respond to that.
So how do you do that in your own business?
I would say like it's all just like constantly monitoring and listening, both like digitally and in person. Mm-hmm. I'll play my music for like a random kid that knows nothing about the music industry, doesn't know pretty much nothing about the music industry, just because it's like you're my target demographic. You're
sure.
a 19-year-old kid in college from Colorado or whatever. Like, right. I want you to listen to my music. Like,
yeah.
So it's just seeing what other people, listening to people, not letting your ego get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, even if you don't agree with somebody, that doesn't mean that if someone doesn't agree with you, that doesn't mean that you're wrong. Like, at the end of the day, you always got to listen to yourself.
For sure.
But you got to take in consideration the people that you want to target.
So do you think about that, like, what feedback to ignore
yeah.
or to, like, you know, like, what to use and what not to use?
Mm. So it's, like, anything that's, like, hateful or just, like, on some hater shit, it's, like, you're not providing feedback. You're just hating. So
right. sure.
that's out the door immediately. Anyone that's, like, yo, I like this song more than this song, mm-hmm. I pay attention to that because I try to create like a different vibe on each song. I don't want any two of my songs to sound alike.
Mm-hmm.
So by seeing what people's preferences over songs are, it kind of lets me like see what direction to kind of keep it moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not the same sounding song, it's like in the song, make my song sound in the direction of that mm-hmm. song that other people prefer.
Okay. Interesting. I don't know if I would hear the Bay influence coming through your music.
Yeah.
Is that?
Well, it's like the Bay sound is like, you think about like, all right, there was a hyphy shit, and then there was kind of like the backpack wave type mm-hmm. shit, and now we're on that new like SOB, but then there's also dudes like Boovy who are kind of to making a combination kind of sound of the Bay and what's popular mainstream.
Right.
And I would say that the Bay influences me not necessarily like with how my music sounds, but like the type of energy and the things I talk about, like Valentino, Bond Like Sharif, mm-hmm. Time For That. Those are all super high energy records. I don't want a Valentine, I just want Valentino. I just want the neck, I poke a face like a casino. Dito, no, I get it in like a free throw. Shawty wants some more, she just can't seem to keep me close. And Bay Area music, like that hyphy shit back in the day, was just so high energy. I feel like that kind of translates across.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Are you, do you talk to those, like, you know, the kind of established players in the Bay?
Not really that much, because it's just like I'm out here in LA now, and I feel like most of the people that are established and popping in the Bay are in the Bay. Mm-hmm. And it's like if I see them, you know, we'll chop it up or talk on Instagram or something like that. But it's just I'm not really looking to be a part of a scene. Okay. I want to create my own thing.
Yeah. What do you want to create?
I want to create my own world.
Uh-huh.
Basically, everything from the clothes you wear to how you interact with people to the music you listen to, the films you watch, the food you eat. Like, there's so much out there in the world that just to limit yourself to only doing things a certain way,
mm-hmm.
you're not even really living life.
That's dope.
Yeah.
So do you think about that, like, beyond music, like what does your brand look like, or what do you, you know, obviously a lot of people, you know, if we think about the Bay, you know, 40 has created a whole industry of products that he's selling, and,
yeah,
you know, and obviously there's a lot of that.
Yeah, I would say like 40 is like definitely a role model to me, in the same way that Akon, Jay-Z, mm-hmm. P. Diddy, Master P are, you know, mm-hmm. they were able to take a music career and turn it into a platform to change the world, essentially. I mean, even if it's just selling products, their lifestyle is inspiring people, and
mm-hmm.
and they inspire me, you know, like it makes me realize that there's more to this than just the music. Like, the music is what drives everything,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the end all be all. And from after, you know, you can't be like the most poppin' rapper when you're 50 years old.
Sure.
So I know that eventually, you know, my time in the limelight is not gonna be my shine isn't gonna be as bright as it was before.
Mm-hmm.
But in the music world, but I can take what I built for myself and use that to branch out from there. You know, do alcohol, okay. furniture, media, clothing,
sure.
all that stuff.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you get, like, do you see, like, that older generation, like, you know, are they giving you advice? Are there people, like, you know, do you see that kind of knowledge being handed down to, like, next generation?
Hmm. I mean, I definitely do have older mentors, like Paperboy, mm-hmm. DA, Stretch, my manager, a couple other ones I just can't think of right now.
Yeah, sure.
My parents, you know. But it's like, in terms of like Jay-Z and P. Diddy and Akon, like, I don't really see them like mentoring youth or anything like that. Which I understand. It's like when you're at that level, it's harder to have individual change.
Sure.
Just because, you know, your time is so valuable to dedicate so much of it to just one person, rather than when you could just do you and be kind of like a beacon, mm-hmm. and inspire multiple people on an individual level. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
But
I also feel like what those guys went through is very different than what you're experiencing. I mean, I'm sure there's lessons you could take from them.
Yeah.
But it's also, you know, it's just such a different world, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, even 5 years ago, everything has changed how it is now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So it's uncharted territory that we're kind of going into. But I think there are, like, principal lessons that you can learn from those people. It might not be specific stuff, but, mm-hmm. like, in terms of, like, the attitude and the work ethic and the mindset, that's what made them successful in their times. And if you can take that same mindset and apply it with the specific strategies that are relevant to now.
Yeah.
You're not gonna lose.
So talk about work ethic. You have you're going to college, going to USC.
Yeah, so I'm on leave of absence right now.
Okay.
But last year, I got a full scholarship to USC for business.
Amazing.
And then I did the whole first year well, I did first semester as like a full-time student. Mm-hmm. And then right before the semester ended, that's when I signed with Columbia and Records. So second semester, I tried to do the full-time student thing again, but it was just like too much, you know? You can't.
So you're like in the studio and in classes?
And then, yeah, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to go to class, work on homework, and then I got a studio session tonight. I'll get back at midnight, hang out with my friends for like 2 hours, and then mm-hmm. do it all over again. And it just became where there was like, it was just too much on my plate. I couldn't handle it. I was getting sick and shit like that.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to drop all my classes except for one, because you need to take at least one class to keep living at the school and eating at the school. And I was going for free. So I was like, all right, I'll just ride this out with one class and then I get to live here for free. So that was like learning about international commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's a once a week class, like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And at the end of the class, you get to go visit the country that you learned about.
Oh, wow.
So I got to go to Japan for free again. Like, I got a tattoo on a school trip. So it was like a great experience.
Yeah. How was Japan?
Japan is crazy, bro. Like, they're living in the future. You walk into the bathroom, the toilet, it just goes, pops up.
I love that.
Like, the everyone there is so polite and respectful. Like, we went to this Kobe beef restaurant, and when we finished eating, the chef that cooked us our food came out, followed us to the elevator, and bowed until the doors closed.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's a whole nother world.
I had that experience in a like a 7-Eleven store.
Right.
Like, the lady came out from behind the counter, brought me my gum or whatever it was. Like, it's crazy.
They're doing it differently over there, but it's like, I think travel is mad valuable just because, like, you can see that the world is able to operate in a completely different way than you're used to.
Man, that's for sure. My favorite Tokyo story is I was at Undefeated.
Yeah.
And we had our baby with us at the time, and so he was in the stroller.
Mm-hmm.
And we had been shopping all day, and so there was no room to take the stroller in the store. And my buddy who lives there was like, just leave it out front.
With the baby in it?
No, we took the baby, but all the packages.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I can't just leave this here. And he's like, no one's going to take your shit.
Mm.
And I was like, dude, okay.
Yeah.
Like, let's try it, you know. And we were in there for probably 10 minutes, came out, all our stuff was just sitting there.
You do that in, like, New York.
Anywhere, man. Yeah. It was, you know, that would not happen, you know, in on Rodeo Drive, right?
Yeah.
Like, somebody would just walk off of it.
We got some free shit.
Exactly. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just so different, man.
Yeah.
And I agree. It's like, it's eye-opening to just see how other people live.
And then I also went to Tanzania this summer, which is like the complete opposite, you know?
Yeah.
It's way less developed, way more rural.
Yeah.
But the people there, they're happy
too.
How'd
that happen?
A scholarship I got was through the Jackie Robinson Foundation to go to college.
Yeah.
And after the first year, that summer in between freshman and sophomore year, they take all the scholars in that class to Tanzania for 2 weeks to do like a service trip.
Amazing.
And that was a completely different experience too. Like,
I bet.
I was showering out of like a bucket that you pull on, like, oh, you gotta use a bathroom. It's just a hole that's been digged on the ground with like a toilet seat on top of it.
Sure.
And like, but the kids there were happy, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's kids running around with no socks and shoes, like just falling down and getting back up again and just laughing it off, you know?
Right.
Versus like in America, a kid falls down while they're playing, all the moms rush up like, are you okay, sweetie? Da, da, da.
Right.
But nah, they're chilling out there in Tanzania. Yeah.
How does all that affect the music you make?
It makes me like more conscious of like what I want to say in my music.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like seeing how different people live all around the world, it's like, all right, I want to make music that everybody can listen to. I want to make music that you can listen to in Argentina, you can listen to in Kentucky, you can listen to in Dubai, and in like Europe, London, everything. So it's like the things that you talk about need to be things, at least in my opinion, need to be things that everybody can relate to, or at least most people can relate to. Because I think especially in hip hop, a lot of people get so boxed in, you know?
Sure.
Like, if you're in Chicago and you're making drill music, that's not going to apply to a lot of people outside of Chicago that are on that scene, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's interesting you say that, because I think, you know, where hip-hop, especially if we're talking about hip-hop, like, where that comes from was really people rapping about their daily, you know, their neighborhood, Compton, or what's happening in the Bronx or whatever. But, you know, what we learn is that the whole world can relate to that, whether it's, you know, poverty or just youth or police brutality or whatever those things are. Like, everybody in the world is experiencing their own version of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think at the same time, you can go too far into that. And, you know, drill is a good example where it doesn't really sound right out of context.
Yeah.
Right? Like in that scene or within that culture, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you take it out of that and it just sounds weird.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but there's, like, the drill hits, though. Like, the Chief sure. Keef, I don't like yeah, yeah. Finita. A fuck, nigga, that's that shit I don't like. A snitch, nigga, that's that shit I don't like. A bitch, nigga, that's that shit I don't like. And, like, that, it's crazy to me how that's basically, like that small little niche, is intended for a niche market, mm-hmm. but it was able to just kind of expand beyond that.
Sure.
And I feel like hip-hop is the new pop. And if you're making pop music that's, like, super, like, indie, alternative, you know, it's harder for that to go mainstream than if you're making, like, more pop that's, like, relatable. So it's like, all right, how can you make the most fun, vibrant hip-hop that everyone's going to want to sing and dance to?
Yeah.
Yeah. Big respect to Chief Keef, though.
So you got that song about SC.
Yeah, bitch, I go to USC.
Yeah, I love it. You're kind of making fun of the school a little bit.
A little bit,
and
yeah.
Then, so what happened after you put that out?
So we put out the song. Well, this is the whole story of the song.
Okay.
There was this, one of my friends, Jordan Usher, he used to play basketball for USC, and he put that song out, and then the coach was like, nah, you ain't gonna do that. So it was starting to blow up.
Oh, it was his song?
Yeah, it was his song originally, and it was starting to blow up.
Yeah.
And then the coach made him take it down. So I was like, damn, that was a good song. People really liked that. Could I remix it? And this was after he had left SC to go play for, I think it was Georgia State or something like that, mm-hmm. in Atlanta. And he was like, yeah, it's good. Just don't put my name on it. So sorry, Jordan, now you're exposed. But, he was like, yeah. So I was like, all right, well, I'm going to take the other two rappers that are popping at USC too, Pure Luxury and mm-hmm. Yassine, mm-hmm. And we'll all get on a song together and we can make an anthem. And I knew it was one of those songs that could be played just as much 20 years from now as it is now. Like,
for sure.
Bitch, I go to USC, USC, USC. By attaching it to an institution mm-hmm. that is bigger than myself, like, for that sure. just gives it so much more longevity.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, they'll be playing that forever.
Forever. Yeah. Yeah. Bitch, I go to USC, USC, USC. Bitch, I go to USC, USC, USC. Bitch, I go to USC, USC, USC. Bitch, I go to USC, I ain't been so in. So then after that, the school wasn't very happy and they sent me a letter.
They did?
Yeah, they sent a letter, but, you know, I think I got it all handled. So, I'm not worried about that right now.
And what about the kids on campus? Like, does that change your profile on campus?
I mean, as soon as I got to USC, I made it known what I do and who I was.
Yeah.
Because when I got to USC, like, I was buzzing, mm-hmm. but I wasn't necessarily at, like, the same level of, like, exposure that I am now. I maybe had, like, 20,000 followers on Instagram or something like that. So I got these little stickers. I might have one in my backpack. Let me see.
You're good.
I just don't want to knock that out. I had these little stickers. Nope, there's none in my backpack. All right. But I had these stickers that basically said, this ugly son of a bitch is respecting super hot chicks. How? Listen, like, here. And then it was my SoundCloud, like, and it was a picture of my face. And it was based off those, like, little pop-up porn ads that you see.
Okay.
So it's like, everyone kind of knows what it is and it's familiar.
Yeah.
And, like, it's very distinctive. But it's also funny, too, tongue-in-the-cheek humor.
Yeah.
So I printed up maybe a couple thousand of those stickers and I was slapping them up everywhere. So there was already a kind of awareness. And when I made Bitch, I Go to USC, it just took it to the next level. Like, every party, people would play it. Every tailgate, people would play it.
Yeah.
And that really allowed me to just have, like, the whole USC community on my side and on my team rooting for me. Because I'm putting on for them, so they're going to put on for me.
Yeah. You play shows on campus and stuff?
Yeah, I was at, like, a tailgate.
Nice.
last Saturday, and like just seeing everybody, bitch, I go to USC.
Oh,
USC,
sure.
USC. It's a great feeling.
I bet.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So what's the plan right now? So you're on leave of absence, and then what?
So I just dropped my song Games on Your Phone, and that's going up crazy right now. It's like my best, like, first week, like, first 2 weeks numbers that I've ever had before. Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. But also what's kind of crazy, man, is, like, you know how, like, people say, like, oh, songs just randomly blow up? I was never a believer in that. I was always like, all right, well, there's some, like, there's always behind-the-scenes shit going on. But I'm experiencing right now, Valentino is going crazy. Like, and I released it 7 months ago.
Yeah.
Because this girl on TikTok, Aviva Sophia, she made, like, a little dance video to it. Doing like little like e-girl cutesy like type anime type shit, and her TikTok started blowing up, so she made Valentino part of the brand, because that was part of her brand, because that was like the song and the video that got her started, like the ball started rolling. So now like Valentino is trending on TikTok. Last week there was like 12,000 videos on TikTok. Now there's 50 something thousand videos, and like you can check right now on Apple Music. It's like the top trending one. And it's been like that for a week. And every day I wake up, I'm like this is like actually happening. Like I'm trending on Apple Music, and I feel like I'm just like a regular person still, just doing my thing.
Sure.
But it's kind of getting to that point where like shit is starting to really start to bubble up. So I'm excited about that. And I'm going on tour for the first time too with Landing Cube. Yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
That'll be a good time.
How I feel about you, I just like the fact that I can keep it real around you. All these ups and downs, like I lost and found you. Can't believe I'm standing here still without you. When you up at night, do you think
it's like you talk about like stuff happening randomly? You know, I think it's both, right? It's like, I mean, you clearly have a plan.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that you can control and certain things you can't control, right? And so, yeah, it's like when something like that happens, some of that is random and some of it isn't.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's, how can I say it? Like you put yourself in a position for that to happen by making that song, or by, you know, all the other stuff you've done that maybe allowed that girl to discover that song and whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not a straight line, but yet it still exists, you know?
It's like, I was just talking to my roommate about this the other night. It's like, you just do something and then the world reacts.
Yeah.
And, or responds rather. Like,
sure.
It, which is just kind of a crazy concept to me, because
it's kind of like that Nike thing you're talking about, right? Yeah. Like they didn't know, when they made Air Force Ones, they didn't know that people were going to be customizing them 20 years later.
Yeah.
You know?
They were like, all right, this is a good shoe, let's put it out. They didn't even realize how great of a shoe it was.
Of course.
But it's like it was completely out of their control.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like they were like, yo, customize these shoes, and then everyone else is going to think they're cool. And
I think when you try to manufacture that, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The best things, like, happen naturally, organically. Yeah, yeah. Like, look at the Popeye's chicken sandwich shit. Like, that. It was
crazy.
Bro, people were waiting in line for hours.
Yeah.
Stores were selling out, like, that, I didn't even have one yet.
Right.
I have never eaten a Popeye's chicken sandwich, and I'm pissed off because I wanted one so bad. But they didn't do a viral marketing campaign for that. They just made a good sandwich.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Like, you try to control too much, and it doesn't happen, right? Like, I always think, you know, when you see that, when you see those collabs, like, in music, that is just, like, it just feels too obvious. It feels like, you know, you just know that person's hot.
Yeah.
You don't really mess with them.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody looked down the charts and was like, we got to just grab this person.
Yeah. That's like classic label move.
Then it doesn't work.
Labels are like the biggest clout chasers out there.
Yeah.
They just want like, oh, they're hot right now. Let's get them on the track and we'll make a bunch of money.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it can work.
It might.
But it's not necessarily going to work.
Right.
You could get some of the hottest people together and it's just not, might not make a good song. They might not vibe with each other.
Yeah.
Their sounds might not interact with each other well. And I think like the best way to succeed and have longevity is just do shit as naturally as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Work with people that you like working with.
So talk about that. So you're signed to records.
Mm-hmm.
How does How did things change? How does your process change being with them versus when you're unsigned?
I'm definitely like glad that I signed, just because I understand that your first record deal is not going to be your best record deal, you mm-hmm. know? There are things that you have to give up and sacrifice in exchange for what they do for you, because basically my platform now is so much greater than it was before.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that I've done, I wouldn't have been able to do without their help. So they definitely are doing their job. And a couple of things that like I thought going into it that I didn't realize, I thought once you sign your record deal, you could just get like whatever artist you want on a sure. feature, they'll just do it. Right. But it's like, oh, these artists have like huge feature prices if they're signed, just because like, like A Boogie's like 100K or some shit like that. If your label has to pay A Boogie's label 100K if you want A Boogie on the song, which is like different if you're an independent artist, they'll be selling verses for like $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, which is way, way more affordable.
Yeah.
But like in terms of like everyday stuff, I have a lot more sessions after mm-hmm. signing. Mm-hmm. I'm able to like promote my stuff a lot better. They have the connections to get me on the platforms that I need to be.
Sure.
And it's just nice to have a team around you, other people providing fresh ideas and other people that are able to work for you when you can't work for yourself.
That's so.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it, because I think a lot of people have, you know, like you said, you don't understand, you don't know what it is until you've done it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think a lot of artists, it's tempting to just think that everything's going to happen for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or there's a, or like you said, you know, they're going to bring ideas you don't like.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the process too, right?
Yeah. I think like a lot of people think like, oh, once you sign the record deal, like that's it, you made it, you don't have to do anything anymore.
Yeah.
But really signing the record deal is the beginning of your story. Sure.
100%.
Everything before that is the prelude. Like that was all, you know, getting you up to this point where now you're in the big leagues. And I think it's something like only like 10% of signed artists like are actually making money.
For sure.
Because like it's such a competitive market out there. Everyone thinks they can make music because everyone literally can make music. All you have to do is download GarageBand, rip a beat off of the internet, and you can record into like the shitty Apple headphones mic that you like come with your phone.
Definitely.
So it's just like you can't stop working for yourself just because somebody else is working for you.
Mm-hmm.
So many people get signed to a record deal and they just get shelved, and because there's other priorities, you know? So one thing that I really like about where I signed with records is that I'm the only artist that's doing stuff like what I am. Like there's no other artist like me that's also signed to that label.
Nice.
So I get prioritized mm-hmm. in the hip hop, kind of melodic hip hop. Well, just the music I make in general. Like,
sure.
They're gonna put more energy and love and attention on my shit.
That's dope. What do you miss about the Bay?
I miss my mom's cooking. I miss El Farolito.
Oh yeah.
Fuck, bro. I thought the Mexican food in LA was gonna be better than the Mexican food in the Bay.
So it's funny, man. You can't get burritos here.
Nah.
And you would think, I mean, I've been my mom lived here, I've been coming here for, you know, my whole life.
Yeah.
You can't get a good burrito in LA.
No. The tacos are good. The tacos are great.
Yeah.
But the burritos, you gotta go to the Bay for that shit.
For sure.
I definitely miss like nature.
Mm.
LA is so industrial. San Francisco, like...
Well, that's because you live down by a sea.
Yeah, downtown. But even, like, in the main city, there's not, like, just as many random parks and shit like that.
Right.
In San Francisco, there's, like, every neighborhood has a little park or a garden or something like that you can go to. And whereas in L.A., it's, like, more spread apart. And, like, the only nature is if you go out of the main city or a couple, like, oases within the city.
Mm-hmm. Do you get... you know, there's this weird rivalry between the Bay and LA.
Yeah.
Which, to me, feels like it's more coming from up north. do people care about that when you go back?
Hell no. Nah. It's like, people in the Bay and LA, like, instantly connect. Like, oh, you're from the Bay? Oh, I'm from the Bay, too. All right, bet. I fuck with you.
Because
it's like, all right, we got that same... If you're from the Bay and you leave the Bay to come to LA, that says something about your mindset. Mm-hmm. That you're able to like understand like the roots and the culture and the and like the general good naturedness of the Bay Area, but you're thinking bigger than just the Bay Area, and you realize that LA is a tool and an environment where you can thrive more than you would just in the Bay. So like when people, it's like, oh, you're probably gonna be like a good person if you're from the Bay and you're out in LA doing this thing.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's definitely an evolved perspective, I think. I remember even when Too Short moved to Atlanta, like there was a little bit of Oakland was kind of mad at him. It's like the Raiders, right?
Yeah.
When they come down here and back and forth, it's like, that's still your people, but you're kind of mad that they left or whatever.
Well, it's like LeBron, when he did, people were burning his jerseys and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, you know, as long as no one's burning my jerseys, I'll be cool. Even if some people are burning my jersey, I'll probably still be cool.
I mean, at least they care.
Yeah, right?
You know?
Right? They're still probably going to listen and just be like, damn, this shit sucks. But you listen though, right?
Exactly. That's so funny. I got to ask you some... I got to ask you some lightning round questions.
All right, let's do it.
Before we go.
The lightning round. What do they call that on Family Feud? Where it's like at the end.
Oh, shit.
What is that?
Listen. I don't know. We need a Family Feud music.
Dun, dun, dun. No, that's Jeopardy.
That's Jeopardy.
Yeah, Family Feud is probably more like intense music.
Dun, 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 dun. Is it Steve Harvey now?
Mm-hmm. Steve Harvey.
I can't fuck with Steve Harvey.
He was the one that, like, fucked up the award, right? Didn't he?
Did he?
He was giving someone an award. Oh, yeah, yeah. It was, like, for Miss World or Miss USA or some shit like that.
Oh, shit.
And then he, like, read it. I was like, oh, my bad, my bad. And, like, they had to, like, the girl came out and everything to get it. And they're like, actually, it was the other girl. Come on, Steve.
I mean, that sucks. I can't imagine how terrible you'd feel, though.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you know, everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah, for sure.
As long as he, like, apologized to the girl, like, genuinely, she was probably cool with it.
No, she's still mad. what's your favorite city to travel to?
Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, I love Chicago.
Dope.
Everything about it, like, the food is good.
What do you do out there?
The girls are great. The clubs are fire, too. Like, it's more like, I feel like when people go out in Chicago, they have more fun.
Okay.
Where in L.A., people go out to, like, flex and, like, posture and shit like that, you know?
Yeah, Chicago's, like, it's still got that Midwest.
Yeah, wholesomeness.
Yeah, a little bit. For sure. Who's your favorite DJ?
Damn. Jasu. Jasu. Okay. Jasu, yeah.
Nice. I'm going to check him out. What's the last great book you read?
How to Win Friends and Influence People in the Digital Age.
Okay.
Which is like a misleading title because it sounds really manipulative, right? Uh-huh. But you win friends by creating genuine, authentic human connections.
Sure.
And influencing people is just how to make a positive, powerful impact that's like meaningful too, you know? So it's just like it's like a mindset book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way to interact with people so that your message comes across and your intent is clear, but you know, you're not going about it the wrong way.
That's dope. I haven't read it. I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah, it's a good book. And because it's like in the digital age, it's like set in like the context of a place where you can say one thing and a million people will see it in a day. So I think it's just like real valuable for people to know for the time that we're living in.
Okay. What movie have you seen the most in your life?
What movie? Oh, dude, when I was like a little kid, I would watch the same movies over and over again. And the two that I remember watching the most was James and the Giant Peach.
Okay.
Where it like starts off with the real people and then it goes into the animation.
Oh, okay.
And the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate. Willy Wonka?
Uh-huh.
The
Chocolate Factory.
Chocolate Factory. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, some shit like
That's dope. You ever wake up with a song playing in your head?
Yes.
And you just can't get it out of your head?
Yeah.
What's the one this morning or the last one you remember?
So I made this song yesterday called Mama.
Okay.
And then it's said it with a whisper. I'ma take my time, but that don't mean you play with mine. That's just how it starts.
So that's cool if it's your own song.
Yeah.
For me, is I write them down.
I'm
gonna see what was the last one. It's not. They're usually not something I like. I mean, sometimes they are, but like sometimes it's like, oh man, I do not want to hear that song, but I can't stop.
Some Katy Perry. Got love for your girl.
This was yesterday. It was Lost in Love, New Edition.
Oh, I don't think I've heard that.
It's a dope song. It's a little... New Edition's a little, like, simpy.
Mm.
But
Maybe you were in your feelings.
Still classic.
Had an emotional dream.
I guess so.
Woke up like, damn.
I fuck with Bobby Brown, man. I can't lie.
Facts.
Every little step I take.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
My son got really into My Prerogative when he was like 7 years old. For some reason, I'm like, you don't know what the song is about. We're going to leave it.
You don't
it
even
at
know
that.
What prerogative means.
No idea. But he loved it. I don't know why. I think it's the bass line. What's something everybody does that's totally normal that bothers you anyway?
Something that everybody does that's like totally normal, like a pet peeve.
Mm-hmm. That's a much better way of putting
it. I don't know, bro. It's like, for me, it's like if there's something that I don't like that you do, I'm probably going to speak on it.
Okay.
Or I'm just, like, not going to care at all. Like, if you're not...
That's great.
If it doesn't affect me, like... So, like, some people are like, oh, I hate when people, like, wear polo shirts and flip the collar up. Like, I don't give a fuck. Wear your shirt however you want to wear your shirt. Yeah. Just don't take my polo shirt and flip the collar up and we'll be cool.
Nice. So, if I... on that note, if I worked for you...
Yeah.
What's something I would hear you say every day?
It'd be like that sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Because that is the most true statement...
Yeah.
Of all time, because anything be like that sometimes. Like, yo, dude, I just got my girl pregnant. It be like that sometimes. Like, that shit happens. Yo, my Postmates driver ate my French fries. It be like that sometimes. It was like some statistic, like 60 or 70% of DoorDash like drivers admitted to eating the food. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So it's like, if you know that going in, though, it's like, all right, whatever. You can have some French fries. I'll probably do the same thing.
That's a cool job, then.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
Free food. You save a lot of money.
That's amazing. I had no idea. I'm going to keep an eye on that next time.
Yeah, right?
That's so funny.
Like, yo, she was heavier last time.
Yo, thanks for doing this, man. It was so much fun talking with you.
My pleasure.
How's everybody find you?
You can find me on Instagram, all music platforms. I just got on TikTok. Okay. Tell the youth to tap in with me. It's 24K G-O-L-D-N. 24K Golden.
And what's coming out next?
Games on Your Phone just released last week. The music video is coming out soon. I got this song Working coming out in, I think, next week or a couple weeks. That's going to be in FIFA.
Nice.
So that's going to be crazy. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, FIFA is global. Like, they're going to be kids in, like, Brazil playing it. So I'm excited for them to hear that. And then come see me on tour with Landing Cube. We're all across America and a couple dates in Canada.
Nice. Yeah, we're going to come when you play LA.
Yeah, fine.
Nice. Well, dude, come back anytime, man. You want to promote it or whatever.
Yeah, bet.
Appreciate you.
Thank you. This was fun. It was a good conversation.
It's great.
Yo, that was 24K Golden on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Make sure you leave us comments, feedback, reviews, all that stuff. You can hit us on Twitter, Facebook, wherever you like. It's at Rebel Radio Net. Make sure you get over to YouTube and check out our episodes on video. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.